Back with you now on The Takeaway, I'm Tanzina Vega with the story out of California, where hundreds of thousands of poor kids don't receive their full child support payments simply because a parent is on welfare.
You know, I have my kids. I won't take them places, buy them stuff, and it's like I can't do that because I'm paying child support, and then it's not really going to support my children.
That's Thomas Lamb Jr., and for a while, he was paying $1,000 a month in child support. But because the mother of his children received government assistance, the family only received $50 a month from Thomas's child support payment. The rest went back to the government.
She would go on welfare, and all the money she received is a debt to me. I have to pay that back. It was like, what's the point of working? Like, they're taking all this money. I still have to pay for my kids' food, clothes, and all this other stuff, but it seemed impossible.
Today, Thomas is in a better situation. His payments got cut in half, and the whole amount now goes to his kids. But before that relief, the payments were a major financial strain, leading him to owe thousands of dollars to the state. Now, lawmakers in California are trying to increase the amount that stays within the families in these situations, something Colorado has already done. Marisa Lagos is a political correspondent for KQED and the co-host of the podcast Political Breakdown. She's been reporting on Thomas Lamb's story and what it tells us about the child support system for poor families in California.
I mean, it feels really counterintuitive on a number of levels, right? I mean, on the one hand, if somebody has the ability to pay cash, shouldn't there be a conversation about whether somebody needs public assistance or whether, you know, this extra money could really help? When we talk about people on public assistance, you know, most welfare payments are a couple $100 per child per month, and there's a cap on that. So it's not as if these people are rolling in the dough to begin with. The other thing that I found when I started to report on this was how really there's some broader effects, right? There's the sort of immediate impact on the wallet of the person paying the child support and the family who's not really benefiting from that child support. But then there's these other intangible things. If the non-custodial parent falls behind on payments, they can actually rack up 10% debt a year. That increases very quickly. And a lot of these people, the vast majority in California, are very low income. They're making less than $15,000 a year. So they're, you know, they don't have extra cash. They can lose their driver's license if they don't make these payments. They can lose their professional licenses. And then, of course, all of that can drive them to either not be able to work or maybe to work outside of the sort of normal boundaries so that they're not seeing their wages garnished. And then there's the even more intangible benefits, like what does this do to their relationship with their children and their ex, and how does that impact the long-term sort of health and well-being of these kids?
Was this structured to be like this? I mean, does the government have a rationale for doing this the way they're doing it, or is this just sort of a bad side effect of a policy gone awry?
Yeah, it's interesting. I tried to really pinpoint that, and it's a little hard to figure out exactly what the motivation was. I mean, we should note that part of this does stem from federal policy. There are federal laws requiring states to essentially collect some of this money and remit it to them to pay back the taxpayer again for these public services. As best I can tell, this really grew out of the sort of welfare queen myths of the 1980s, which was largely, as you know, racially based. This idea that black moms were having kids specifically to collect public benefits, that African-American fathers were acting sort of, you know, in an irresponsible way because they didn't care. And I think that the idea was probably that this would maybe impact that kind of behavior, perceived behavior, we should say, that it might lead to less people having kids or being on welfare. But as we know from decades of research at this point, the sort of, you know, base of those laws was flawed to begin with. And of course, they didn't have that impact because nobody's having a kid to get $100 in public assistance or child support payments. And so I think that, you know, there has been some move on the federal level to tweak this and give states more flexibility. But my understanding is that broadly, this is sort of, this is not the only way that we tend to sort of punish people for being poor and try to claw back those benefits in any way possible.
Your reporting is based in California, but tell me, you mentioned that this is also part of a federal law. Does that mean that this is happening in other states around the country?
It absolutely is. And interestingly, as we've seen, I think more attention paid to the issue of that what I just, you know, with this idea of punishing poor people for being poor. We've seen this around fines and fees discussions around Black Lives Matter. We've seen it around, you know, a lot of other areas. Some states are trying to fix it. California has a bill that we can discuss, but Colorado actually eliminated this requirement entirely. They decided to say, if you pay child support, it goes directly to the family and we will reimburse the federal government for anything that they're owed, you know, in relation to those benefits. And they actually saw almost a 65% increase in non-custodial parents paying these child support payments once they knew it was going directly to their kids. So I do think there's a national movement happening. And I think the next question will be, as the states tackle this, if there's enough pressure on the federal government to really change the law in that way.
We know that there's one California lawmaker, Nancy Skinner from Oakland, who introduced legislation this year to try and keep more money within the families. What has been the response to that proposed legislation?
Yeah, so this bill initially would have entirely said any child support money goes to the families, the government keeps none of it, and then the state would have been on the hook for paying back the federal government for that portion. It did get watered down in an appropriations committee. There was concern that it was going to cost the state budget too much money. I'll note Skinner thought that was sort of ironic because she said that most of this is uncollected debt, right? So this is not necessarily money the state's getting, but it's money they're owed, but they may never see. But she feels like this is a step in the right direction. The new bill would say if you are a family with one kid and you're on public assistance, that the custodial parent gets $100 instead of $50 a month. And if there's two or more kids, it's $200. There's a separate bill that she's also supporting that would eliminate that 10% interest that we talked about. And between those two, you know, she really feels like this is a step in the right direction, but she would still like to come back in the coming years and see the state really entirely wipe out this whole debt collection issue and pass all the money on directly to the kids and the families.
Marisa Lagos with excellent reporting out of California is a political correspondent for KQED and the co-host of the podcast Political Breakdown. Marisa, thanks as always.
Always a pleasure, Tanzina.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.